Now for agribusiness news, markets, and weather from Studio C, this is Agriculture Today.
Taking a look ahead at the National Weather Service 8 to 14 day outlook.
USDA meteorologist Brad Rippey says, although not official, winter is knocking on the door.
The cold air that is currently in place across much of the eastern half of the country will erode during this time frame, and we expect above normal temperatures across virtually the entire country as we head toward mid-December. At the same time, a few areas will see more active precipitation. We do expect above normal precipitation throughout the northern United States, along the Atlantic seaboard, and along the Gulf Coast. But areas expected to remain on the dry side as we head toward mid-December, expecting below normal precipitation from Southern California, Southwest, through the Southern Plains, and into parts of the Mid-South and the lower Ohio Valley.
Ag News Now. Agriculture Today.
I went to him and I said, Shinzo, we have to talk. What? Trade.
Before the election, President-elect Donald Trump spoke at the Economic Club of Chicago.
And he goes, I'll never forget it. I know. I said, what do you know? I knew you'd come to me. Why do you say that? Because I can't believe, I wouldn't tell this story if he was alive, actually. He said, I can't believe how many years it's been that nobody even negotiated with us in America. I said, Shinzo, you have to pay for your cars. You're sending millions of cars. You don't accept a car from us. You don't have one car that you accept, and yet we're selling 3 million, 4 million of your cars. I said, Shinzo, on agriculture, you won't even accept our agriculture. And I renegotiated a whole trade deal from a little disadvantage because I was stuck with a bad deal. I mean, I got stuck. We have trade deals that were so bad that I said, who are the people that are doing it? They're either very stupid or they're getting paid off, okay? It's one or the other. It's very simple. We had the worst trade deals all over the world. South Korea, I love South Korea. They're wonderful people, extremely ambitious. They have a money machine. We protect them from North Korea and other people. North Korea is very nuclear. I get along with him very well, Kim Jong-un.
Yes.
But wait, they don't pay us anything. And I said, this is crazy. If I didn't put tariffs on, you know, the car companies, they make most of their money at small trucks. Mm. I put tariffs on China, but I put 27.5%. Otherwise, we'd be flooded with Chinese cars. And all of our factories would close. We'd have no jobs at all in the auto industry. That goes for electric, by the way, which is a killer, which I've explained, and I don't think I have to bore anybody by talking about it. But I put tariffs on South Korea because they were sending in trucks. And I put tariffs on, fairly substantial tariffs. Do you know that our car companies make almost all of their money with the small trucks, SUVs and small trucks? If I took those tariffs on, you would be inundated. Every car company would be out of business. And I got calls from Ford. I got calls from everybody saying, sir, I can't believe you're doing this for us. You saved our company. They make all their money with us. They make most of their money with a small truck.
And when it comes to the U.S. dollar?
The reserve currency is under threat because you have Iran, you have Russia, you have China. China's the one that you have to worry about because they want it.
Yeah.
They want to have the yuan be the thing of power. So here's what I'm doing. Again, I hate to go back to it. If somebody says, and I know countries want to get out because they don't respect our leadership, they look at this guy, they say, you got to be kidding. And she's worse than him. By the way, I never thought I'd say this. She is not as smart as Biden, if you can believe. This is not what we had 4 years of this lunacy, and we can't have it anymore. We're not going to have a country left. OK, currency. Very important.
Yes.
And if you want to go to third world, if you want to go to third world status, lose your reserve currency. We have to have that. We cannot lose it. If you'll go to third world status in this country because you take a look at the way things are running. If a country tells me, sir, we like you very much, but we're going to no longer adhere to being in the reserve currency. We're not going to salute the dollar anymore. I'll say that's OK. And you're going to pay a 100% tariff on everything you sell into the United States. And we love your product. I hope you sell a lot of it into the United States, but you're going to pay 100% tariff. He will then follow it up by saying, sir, it would be an honor to stay with the reserve currency. That will be like just playing. That's not even chess, that's checkers. But you don't have other, listen to this, you don't have other people that can talk that way.
It's Agriculture Today.
With Agriculture Today, here's Tony St. James.
We've signed an agreement with Brave Harvest that we'll be doing over 1 million acres of spraying by drones this year.
Matt Karstens is president and CEO of Landa, speaking at the 2024 Midwest Ag Conference in Chicago.
And we have that contract with them across the globe. Most of it will be in the United States, probably about a third of it in the Midwest, a third of it on the coastal areas, and then another third all over different parts of the rest of the globe. But, you know, that showcasing the farmer, that may make them think different about buying their next sprayer. Maybe delay that to see how this works in 25. Or, you know, whatever that case may be. So we're trying to be ahead of the curve to show them and get them ready before we just dump it on them and go, hey, guess what? This technology's here, right? And they're going, I don't know what this is. I got to wait a year. I got to see the neighbor prove it. They've now seen it 1, 2, or 3 years ahead of time walking through there. So there's something for the inventor, something for our farmers. I think we give anywhere from, Steph knows better, but probably 7 to 10 tours a week in that thing, which is not what of non-farmers. So we had people show up at our door from Morocco. They were OCP, the phosphate producer, said, hey, we heard you. And we're like, well, you understand, we buy phosphate from you. You didn't have to just show up as a stranger. But that's the kind of the reputation that that facility has received. And we're proud that that's what I believe a new age co-op should be doing. Not the things that our great grandparents put in play, but the things of how we lead the farmer into the future and do the things that we started the co-op, like grain and agronomy, as well as we can.
Karsten speaking at the Midwest Ag Conference hosted by the Chicago Federal Reserve. Now, talking about something new, but he says at the same time, there's something old that's still relevant today.
So in Iowa, you know, it's a real great state. We wear a tie at funerals and weddings. That's it. You know, so we've got a low bar to cross here. But there's a show, a noon show. I think it runs from 11 to 1. Every day that's called The Big Show. And the individual that does that is named Bob Quinn, and he's a huge rural ag person, a great voice for agriculture, quite honestly. And, you know, we've struggled in this world of farmers and all this new means of communication. You know, do we talk to them through text, email, social media? And the answer is it's kind of you have to do all of it because some farmers are here, some farmers are there, some farmers are on this side of it. But there's one thing that they all kind of do in Iowa is this big show. So Bob Quinn had been a big fan of Landis's and our innovation and things that you got to see when you were out last, David. And so he came to us and said, you know, would you look want to look at doing something, you know, more prolific with this? And we said, well, we do have this issue of communication and how we talk to our farmers and how we get information and back and forth. So we are now every day, the big show is broadcast from the Innovation Connector in Landis's headquarters there in Des Moines. And it's been really neat now. We've got a space that that the team's putting in where when they do that tour, which actually ends at our Landworks group, we can talk about that later, but about halfway through is his broadcast area. So they get to see what a studio looks like, which is not much, but they think it's neat. So who am I to judge? And that tells the story a little bit of what, you know, what broadcast has been. But here's a program that's on AM, right? Like I have a really modern GMC and I can't get the FM because you got to do a decimal and mine won't do it. So you got to listen to this thing on AM, right? And we almost got rid of AM bands, right? But in Iowa, this is the deal and it's been amazing how we've been able to communicate with our farmers in a way that they now are excited about and listen to hear what we're doing this week.
It's Agriculture Today.
This is Agriculture Today.
As many of you know, to boost competition and enhance local and regional food systems, the USDA has invested nearly $4 billion in new and expanded meat and poultry processing under the American Rescue Plan, and investing in a bold effort to transform our food system, as well as making access to healthy, local, affordable food more readily available.
Ag Secretary Tom Vilsack earlier this year.
But critical to these efforts is ensuring that incumbent market players do not deploy predatory, anti-competitive, discriminatory, or unfair practices to block new competition, all of which falls under our authority under the Packers and Stockyards Act. And that act basically goes from the farm to the grocery checkout line. For the past 40 years, USDA has largely not fully enforced our fair and competitive practice laws in meat sales. During that period, we've seen retail, wholesale, and packer markets being consolidated, and markets have become increasingly closed to independent retailers, processors, and producers. To refresh our approach in light of modern markets, we've conducted over the last several years an investigative study. We took public comment and we supported academic examination of this particular topic. And today, we're producing a report from those efforts that finds a range of practices that are in need of attention. Specifically, the trend of increasing concentration by largest meat packers, distributors, and retailers. What appears to be onus requirements and potential hidden fee arrangements that dominant firms may now impose, and pricing practices that potentially obstruct access to markets for smaller producers and processors.
Vilsack has also been focused on price discovery.
We all know that cattle plays an important role in the economic health of many rural communities. And so fairness in cattle for cattle producers is vitally important. For years, USDA has fielded concerns from producers around beef packers using reported regional cash or spot prices as base prices for feed cattle for the formula for pricing arrangements and agreements, commonly known as the alternative marketing agreement. That's why we're announcing, third, our steps in rulemaking to support better price discovery and a fairer trading system and cattle trading markets. Today, we're releasing an advance notice of proposed rulemaking that's going to request comment on several interventions USDA has identified as possible ways to remove obstacles to price discovery and to reduce the potential for cash-negotiated benchmark prices used in AMAs as base prices to have adverse impacts on trading in cattle. Upon publication in the Federal Registry, options presented for public comment will include the following. The promotion of new and different benchmarks that provide more depth and reliability in cattle pricing for AMA contracts and have less risk of manipulation for non-AMA producers. Enhanced choice for all producers by preventing packers from requiring exclusivity in AMA agreements with possible options for using cattle exchange or auction trading. Enhanced identification and thus enforcement of practices that manipulate those benchmarks. Limits on packers delaying the pickup of live cattle that they've purchased without covering the costs. This is kind of a backdoor captive supply in the cash market itself. And written policies and procedures for packers designed to access contributions to price discovery and to determine compliance with fair trading practices.
It's Agriculture Today.
Ag News Now. Agriculture Today.
Russia has never had a president that they respect so much, but more importantly, or less importantly, I guess, I went into Russia and people said, oh, he likes Putin and Putin likes him. Let me tell you, the first thing I did was terminated Nord Stream 2. Nobody ever heard of Nord Stream 2. It's a pipeline from Russia to Germany and all over Europe.
At a pre-election event held at the Economic Club of Chicago, President-elect Donald Trump.
I said, wait a minute, to NATO. I said, so let's get this straight. My first meeting, I said, so Putin's building the biggest pipeline in the world. He's going to Germany, but all over Europe. And you're paying him billions of dollars a year, billions of dollars a month. You're paying, Germany's paying billions of dollars a month. And we're supposed to protect you against the guy that you're paying all this money to. So is there something wrong with my thinking? So he's building a pipeline to Germany, and we're spending, and by the way, until I got there, we were spending almost 100% for NATO because we had all these delinquent countries that weren't paying. When I got there, I said, you know what? And by the way, my biggest fan is Stoltenberg, just leaving, Secretary General of NATO. He said, when Bush came in, he made a speech and left. When Obama came in, he made a speech and left. When Trump came in, he made a speech and he said, let me see your books. And I found out in the books that nobody was paying. There were only seven countries that were paying. We were supporting NATO. They screw us on trade so bad, the European nations. And then on top of that, they were screwing us on the military. So they're taking a tremendous advantage of us, $350 billion deficit on trade. And we're then supporting them. In other words, it's not sustainable. You can't keep doing this. You can't have that, China, all of these countries. And Stupid people made these deals. I saw trade deals that were so stupid that were so bad that you'd have to be an idiot to sign them. And we signed them for years. I could tell you trade deals that I have never seen anything. I said, who would agree to this? They had to be corrupt. They had to be corrupt. To make those deals, they had to be corrupt, because there is no way a rational human being, I always say either corrupt or extremely stupid, because there's no way a rational human being would ever sign the trade deals that this country signed. And I got out of many of those deals. I told South Korea, I'm sorry, you're going to have to pay for your military. We have 40,000 troops over there. You're going to have to pay. You become a very wealthy country. Just to finish, you become a very wealthy. They said, no, 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 we will not pay. We will not. We haven't paid since the Korean War. I said, no, you got to pay. I said, would $5 billion a year to start off with? No, no. They went crazy. They agreed to two. I got $2 billion for nothing. And I said, here's what we're going to do. They said, we can't agree to this because we have to go through Parliament. They have the Parliament or whatever their legislature is. I said, that's okay. I fully understand that. Make it $2 billion. But next year I'm going to talk to you again. And I was going to make it $5 billion. And they knew it was coming. The happiest people to see that it was Biden instead of Trump with them, South Korea. You know what they did? They cut off the deal that I made where they were paying us. They backed to nothing because they went back to Biden and they gave it to him for nothing. They were willing to pay. We have 40,000 troops in harm's way. Very serious, because you have North Korea is a very serious power. They have tremendous nuclear power. And I said to South Korea, you got to pay. And they agreed to do it. And Biden then cut it back, and it's a shame. And I could tell you 50 deals. And if I were there now, they'd be paying us $10 billion a year. And you know what? They'd be happy to do it.
Agriculture Today.
With Agriculture Today, here's Tony St. James.
What's really interesting is the farmer of tomorrow. And as a co-op, we've got farmers of yesterday, some farmers of today, and it's probably about a third, and then the farmer of tomorrow.
Matt Carstens is president and CEO of Landus, speaking at the 2024 Midwest Ag Conference hosted by the Chicago Federal Reserve, looking at solutions for tomorrow's farmers.
The farmer tomorrow, and generically, I should back up. If you want to find your sweet spot to the farmer, there's two factors: profit and ease of business. And I use ease of business. You all know farmers have auto steer, right? Which does nothing to help them profitability wise, but makes their life easier. Almost every farmer's got auto steer. I mean, there's no question they were going to install that, pay for it, pay the subscription all day long. And so those are the variables you've got to please the farmer with, right? And some on that curve are, give me stuff that I can relate to back in yesterday. Some are on today's level. But there's a chunk that look at this GPT and go, I got to have it. I got to do something with this. I want to be better at what I do. I want to go to Mexico and find my own users of grain. So we partner with these companies in a way that we have the exclusive. So if you want to use Synthesis, it has to be through Landus in the world. You want to do Brave Harvest, has to go through Landus in the world. And the list goes on. So that's how we protect ourselves, that we don't end up with a bunch of people in here eroding it or not authentic to the cause of what we're trying to do. And those companies then really work with their shareholders to develop it. They get somewhere around 50%, could be 60, could be 40% of the profits that we make. We move that through the supply chain to them, but they do all the development. They own it. We're on the other side as that means to the end to bring it to the marketplace, including first peek at things in the innovation connector. So I think we've developed a model that, because as a co-op, we're eating ramen noodles. It's like we're in college all the time. And as a co-op, there's no great profit here. But we've got to find unique ways to bring those smart minds and companies to our farmers, and using their investors, giving them commitments that they can use with investors to grow investors and make that happen. So LandWorks is a company that actually was born out of DefenseWorks. So DefenseWorks started when a Navy SEAL commander lost one of his war fighters, and the commander said, "I will never lose under my watch another human life," and said, "I want to develop the Iron Man suit." And there's a lot. I mean, that looks great in Marvel, But, you know, it's a big difference when you're in the field of battle, right? And they came back and said, if you give us about 6 years and about $500 million, we can get this baby done. He said, I tell you what, you got 6 months, you got $50 million, go do it. And they came back and said, you got to cut through all the government red tape. You got to give us free brain. You got to give us access to Disney was involved in the development of this. They did it on time. They did it below budget. And out of that was formed Defense Works. So Defense Works is a 501c3, 11 innovation hubs that are all government, so Navy, Army, CIA on down the line. And then there's this 12th one, which is LandWorks. And LandWorks is the only non-government that we have access to all 150,000 inventors around the globe. So when we wanted to develop synthesis, we send that out in what we call Tech Thursdays. And all these responses came back. We took the top five, then narrowed it down to the one, which ended up being Tesseract in Kansas City that helped us develop it.
It's Agriculture Today.
This is Agriculture Today.
Normally, when a Secretary of Agriculture addresses a group of important people in agriculture at the end of an administration, normally you would spend some time talking about the things you've done.
Ag Secretary Tom Vilsack.
Thousands of farmers and forested owners, millions of acres now committed to climate-smart agriculture. Historic levels of investments in conservation and renewable energy production on farms across the United States as a result of the Inflation Reduction Act. Investing nearly $4 billion in establishing and strengthening a more resilient food system. Creating better market opportunities for small and mid-sized farming operations. And really creating a more resilient food system. Support for new market opportunities. Our favorite at USDA is the sustainable aviation fuel opportunity that we think opens up a whole new vista of opportunity. But it's not just SAF. It's really one of many, many bio-based products that can be produced from agricultural production. Or even our export wins for the best 4 years. Sometimes it's hard to believe this, but it's the best 4 years of exports by value in our history. And our farm income each year of this administration has exceeded the 20-year average. So I could talk a lot about what we've done, but the reality is you all here are expecting us to continue working.
But with all that's been done, he says, there's more to do.
We are here today to reflect on the more work that needs to be done, the disasters we need to deal with, the farm bill we need to pass, and additional steps that we can take to advance the president's competition agenda. Because it is an agenda that's designed to lower food prices, bring fairness to farmers, and promote more resilient and competitive food systems across the entire food supply chain. So today we're announcing three significant steps to do so.
Right now, though, it looks like the next Secretary of Ag will not come into office with a farm bill.
Much like American farmers and ranchers who are committed to innovation and making U.S. agriculture the best it can be, we need the same from our farm bill and from Congress. Historically, Congress has been able to come together to reach a bipartisan consensus to successfully pass this legislation and make it the best farm bill it can be. So farmers and rural communities are not left with a lot of uncertainty. We're eager to see Congress do its job so that USDA can start the massive undertaking that will be involved in implementing a new farm bill. We are prepared to do so. Time is of the essence, I think it's fair to say. We need a farm bill that works for the many and the most, not just the few. We need a farm bill that is not going to leave anyone behind, whether they are farmers who are extraordinarily successful or those who may be on the edge. And I'm proud to say that the USDA has figured out a way to help over 43,000 producers that were faced with some very difficult situations with payments. We've provided some loan servicing assistance and help to keep those folks on the farm, and we're going to continue to do what we can to make sure farmers are able to continue farming. Now, we're quickly running out of time this fall for Congress to come together to address the farm bill in a bipartisan way. Either with a real bipartisan deal on this bill, or at least a minimum, if that cannot be done, an extension to prevent potential complications and reverting to so-called permanent law, which dates back to the 1930s. The reality is this got to get done before the end of the year, and the reason it does is because if it's not, then you're basically dealing with a new administration and a new Congress, and that, of course, would suggest that you're not going to have a farm bill for some time. We can get this done as long as everybody understands the longer we wait, the harder it gets. So a common sense, reasonable, bipartisan approach is the only way to accomplish this, and I think this is what American farmers and ranchers and producers and rural communities expect and deserve.
It's Agriculture Today.
You're listening to Agriculture Today.
One, two, three.
Agriculture Secretary Tom Vilsack and 12-year-old Alaska native Rose Burke with the honors of lighting the Agriculture Department's holiday tree Tuesday at ceremonies at USDA headquarters in Washington, D.C. Rose's honor coincides with her essay on the U.S. Capitol Christmas tree being selected as part of the annual essay contest.
People from all over our country come to our nation's capital, Washington, D.C. When they see this majestic Christmas tree, they will be reminded of our farthest north state. Though far away, we are united in love for our country.
As well as its role as part of the Tuesday evening Capitol Christmas tree lighting ceremony featuring an Alaskan spruce selected as this year's tree. I'm Rod Bain reporting in Washington, D.C.